Our guest on this edition of Metanoia is Naeem Muslim, a social activist and transformation facilitator. I've known this good brother, this gentleman, for several decades. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
I met you in early 2000, and you were working on a program in Camden, New Jersey, a fatherhood initiative, Fathers Go Get Your Sons, Don't Forget Your Daughters. What was the genesis of that movement? Where did it come from? And what prompted you to be, because you were the face of that initiative. So what prompted you to make that your life mission?
When that was inspired on my heart, I was serving as a board member at one of the junior high schools in Camden, New Jersey, Hatch Junior High, in the leadership of a principal named Jan Gillespie. And around that time, African-American males and Latino males in particular, they were dropping out of schools heavily and standing on the corner, getting involved in like inappropriate activities. And so when things like that happen, you know, these funding streams come out, you know, it's the American way. And so people began to get, or organizations began to get monies to support young men and getting off these corners and getting back into school. And so what we decided to do was have a community forum and invite everybody that was getting funds to support these young men, you know, in that journey, to talk to the community about what they're actually doing. So in the forum, you know, we had everybody present, and I mean, I'm talking about the police department, Camden County, Camden City, you know, people that received these funds. And so we had them present what their plan was to address the issue. To make a long story short, at the end of the forum, I made some closing remarks, and I said that we heard some good initiatives, only for me as a father, it felt like Band-Aid work. And I said that I didn't hear a process or a collaborative that was really in place where they were working together to help these young men. So I said, if there's 10 boys on a corner, then there's 10 fathers out there. Fathers, go get your sons out of the way of trouble. And so Jan Gillespie said to me, she said, Naeem, did you hear what you said? And I said, yes. Well, about maybe a couple months later, it was like in early morning prayer, and it came on my spirit. Fathers, go get your sons. I realized when she said to me, did I hear what I said, that I really wasn't listening from where she was speaking from. And so then I heard it. And at that time, I was working with Mr. Lawrence Gray at the Camden Community Activity Center. So that morning when I went to work, I met with her and I said, listen, fathers, go get your sons. Don't forget your daughters hadn't showed up yet, but fathers, go get your sons. Let's put this thing in motion. So we sat there and we created Fathers Go Get Your Sons March and Rally. We provide the park, you provide the fun. So we went and got some permits, and we marched through certain areas of the city of Camden, which we deemed were the worst parts of the city. And we just marched through the city, and we were just chanting, Fathers, go get your sons. We made signs, you know, we walking through the community. And as we were walking through the community, people started joining in, and they began to march with us, driving with the cars. It was really incredible. And I think when we started, it might have been about 30 people. When we ended up at our destination, which was at the Camden High Park, we had 300-400 people that was out there in the park with us. And so we just had fun. And so with our little speaker, we talked about Fathers Go Get Your Sons. It didn't have no shape, no fashion, no form. It was just inspired at the time, you know? And so that's how it actually got its birth. And then out of constantly doing the work, being consistently doing the work, we began to create partnerships with the city of Camden, YMCA, Rutgers University, and we began to create activities where we had teaching curriculum that we did with fathers and mothers, and we utilized the Y and Rutgers University. We utilized their activities where we can actually bond with the children. That's at the heart of how that particular initiative got started.
Well, you've always been a proponent of strong families and intergenerational relationships. Today in our society, we see the families under immense pressure, stresses, and we see a general breakdown. What techniques do you present, train, and use to facilitate parental, particularly male parental involvement and their whole process of interpersonal and intergenerational transformation?
That's a really great question. I'm going to answer it a particular kind of way. Over the years, there's been many books and curriculums and approaches to addressing that particular issue that we find ourselves confronted with. And the question becomes, with all that has been done by some outstanding individuals, why does it continue to look the way that it looks? For me, I don't believe that there's one answer. I believe that whatever you find in your spirit that you feel supports in that initiative in addressing that issue, then just simply do it. For me, I used so many of the different techniques on myself to come to an understanding as to why things wasn't working the way that they could. And for me, I felt like because we were broke as individuals, we were hurting as individuals, nothing was working because we had to address something before any of these strategies or techniques or curriculums could really impact us. And what came out of the speaking of men in particular in the Fathers Go Get Your Sons initiative was the idea of love, like really loving ourselves and loving myself. And why am I not loving myself? And so the conversations begin to focus around the idea of loving oneself. And in the reviving of the heart and in embracing the reality that I'm struggling with loving myself, as we begin to work on that, healing began to take place. What was interesting, though, it's different for everybody. You know, love does what it does, but it's different for everybody. And the whole idea was to have each individual just simply, you know, be honest with itself about, you know, who they have been being. And in that reality, confronting yourself and begin to work on your own healing and being true to yourself. One of the things I would say to men all the time, and even to this very day, I ask a simple question: would you like all the men in the world to be like you as a friend, as a father, as a husband, et cetera, et cetera? And if your answer is no, then there's work that we need to do. And if your answer is yes, then there's still work that we need to do, and we need to share what's working for you. And so this is the opening to having these particular conversations, getting brothers to understand, first of all, it doesn't matter how well in depth thought out a program, an idea, a strategy, or an initiative is, it won't serve any purpose until we decide that we're going to heal. And once the heart is ready, the learning takes place.
What does healing look like when love is the catalyst? In other words, we use the word love so frequently, and it has many different meanings to many different people. So when you're talking about personal transformation, healing and community transformation, what does that look like at its core?
I think it starts, first of all, in recognizing as I just said, that you got to work on yourself. Once you work on yourself, your vision changes. You get open to greater possibility. You know, your heart becomes more alive to the reality that this thing is bigger than you. Starting with the fact that when you begin to heal and you truly work on yourself, you begin to see that I am you and you are me. We are the same. And then recognizing that we are the same, then sharing with one another what you want for yourself becomes a catalyst in terms of how we begin to start shaping the reality of what love looks like. So I remember growing up as a little boy in the community, if we was doing something out of order, the whole community was involved in, you know, getting with you. Then when you got home, you know, you got the bigger reality. And so that's not a foreign idea. I think that we've learned to forget because we're in a society that constantly bombard us with all of these new ideas and this pomp and glitter and, you know, and this fast life. And we kind of move away from what we actually know because we didn't know it. And so when we begin to embrace it, then we begin to trigger that dormant reality that sits within ourselves. And then you begin to take a position of love, and then you begin to act in that way. So being supportive to people and being kind, you know, and caring about your community, getting involved in community activities, utilizing the gifts and the talents of one another, I think that that's what makes it work.
Some people might hear this and say, well, I'm not comfortable. I like what I hear. I want that. But how do I go about that? How can I make those steps? And the key to what you're talking about is the key to what all the great masters and avatars talked about is self-mastery, dealing with yourself, with oneself, with the intent of being a benefit to the collective. So how do you deal with someone who wants to do it, but whose baggage and they've left a trail of fire everywhere they've gone up to that point in their life? How do you get them to start and get over that hump?
Another great question. What has worked for myself and also others in the past is to take a look at a particular kind of reality. That reality is that there's a strong possibility that we may have been taught by the wrong teachers. And because we've been taught by the wrong teachers, within that narrative, we learn to become who we have learned to become. And in most cases, we've learned to become disconnected from ourselves, one. And then in being disconnected from ourselves, we get disconnected from those things that are important to the collective. So once you recognize that, what we do is we turn your attention to the connect. An example of that is we have a conversation about, you know, when we were born, when we were children, you know, and we exited the womb of our mothers. When we exited the womb of our mothers, it didn't matter what the conditions was. The moment we exited the womb, love was everywhere. You know, it was supportive, you know, the energy was good, people were smiling, people was happy, people was clapping, all this great stuff was going on. Along the journey, though, as we begin to be introduced into the society norms or the way we was taught to live, then we learn how to lose presence to who we really are. And as a result of that, you have all these breakdowns. See, I believe that the conversation about love, which we'll talk more about, I believe that that's the magic potion. I believe that that's the thing that does the self-correct. When you realize that you have maybe been taught by the wrong teachers, the first thing that allows you to do is to forgive yourself and to forgive others. And when you begin to do that and begin to start taking a real that look at yourself and start doing the work that you have to do with a different kind of narrative and a different kind of information, self-correcting becomes so much easier because now you're operating off of a narrative that's more natural to your nature. So I believe that in order to make everything else work, that we need to be able to take a look at this, the condition that we're in, how we got in the condition that we're in, to recognize that we learned this kind of behavior, we learned how to be like this, and the absence of proper information, all of the issues that we had, is naturally a part of it. We're going to have breakdowns, we're going to have illnesses, we're going to have violence, we're going to have crime, because we disconnected. But when we resolve that issue within ourselves, we begin to self-correct.
And throughout the ages, the mystery schools, the spiritual training focuses on that personal introspection, personal development and correction, doing all of that, that whole alchemy piece where you're burning off the dross. So what types of guidance do you give people to help them move through this process?
Well, I believe that I know the work that we've been doing, first of all, is a simple workshop that we do that I'm using the word workshop, but it's a conversation that may take like less than a minute. And what I do is I ask people, I say, listen, I want you to take a deep breath and hold it. And so they take a deep breath and they hold it. And, you know, I just sit there patiently until something happens. Well, we know the thing that happens is they're going to start breathing. When they start breathing, then I say to them, I say, did you honor my request? And they may say yes, they may say no, depending on where they're at, right? But the object of that is to get them to recognize that somewhere along the line, they stopped listening to my request and they started listening to their own internal voice. That particular voice said to them, in that particular situation, I want to live, breathe. And then I say, that's the voice that we will be talking to as we journey through these conversations of keep love present. And then I will engage them in conversations around, well, where did that voice come from? And I've never heard anybody say other than from within. Exactly. So you have this internal life coach, right? That when you listen to this life coach, it instructs you to want to live. Now, you naturally know this because you just shared that with me. So tell me five things you do that you don't know and they cannot do it. That is the power of being conscious. So in that way, bringing a person to recognizing that they, you know, they are now present and they are now awoke to the reality within. Now the whole goal is to do the work of trusting that. And that's what it's going to take, to trust that. Now the environment doesn't require you to trust that. The environment has taught us to be survivors or to be these particular individuals for whatever particular reason for each person. But what we have to recognize in having the proper knowledge of ourself is that when we do, then we're able to withstand those influences and stay focused on the reality of knowledge of my own self and what that is leading me to in terms of renewing who I am and recognizing that I am the requirement for being the best that I can be, not the environment, because that is the condition that we're in. Because on the other hand, the environment should be the reason why it requires us to be the best that we can be. But in this breakdown, it's just not happening like that. So you have to have the kind of knowledge of self where you are strong enough within you to say no to those influences, say yes to who you really are, and continue on that journey. And that's the real work. Nobody, in my view, can tell you what that is for you. We can coach you, we can facilitate, we can guide you. But once you go within, what's there that's present and what's there that's not present, only you know what that is. And it's going to be up to you to decide that I'm going to take that on. Now, when it shows up and you find out that maybe I'm a procrastinator, you know, maybe I'm a liar, maybe I have bad morals, maybe I don't eat right, whatever those things are, then it's going to be up to you to begin to seek out what it is that you need to do for yourself. Now, we can say to you, we can refer you to this person, to that person. We can say, eat, you know, organic foods. We can say, read this particular book. We can say, we're going to do yoga. We can say that we're going to do exercise. We can say that we're going to do that. And we do. Only what's more important is that the work that we're doing, we're working to inspire you to recognize that you got to do it for yourself, because the truth is, there's no such thing as lack. That is a conversation that's created by mankind. There's no lack nowhere in creation, so nothing's missing. It's more about re-inspiring yourself to begin to seek out what it is you need to seek out in order to do what you need to do for you. When that happens, I just call it the miraculous miracle. You begin to see all that you need to see to do what it is that you need to do. And I believe, and we'll talk about that later, when people arrive at that particular place, then it doesn't happen on paper. It doesn't happen in conversations. It happens in the heart. Once it happens in the heart, then it begins to be shown in the mouth, out the mouth, and then shared with people. And then all kind of great things happen.
A lot of people have heard that voice, but it's been clouded out. And because the voice has their best interest at heart, and because it wants them to do, I believe, what they came here to do, and most of us, and part of this dysfunction is the fact that we've been sidetracked from our mission that we came here to do. How do you encourage people to have confidence in that voice when the voice is telling them oftentimes things that are totally different than their experiences and totally different from what they've been told who they are in terms of their competencies and their potentiality for being something entirely different? Because a lot of times people might think, my man, this is crazy. These voices are trying to drive me crazy. They're telling me things that go against the grain, that training that you talked about earlier, they go against the grain, that training. So I must be, they must be mirages or something.
Well, they are mirages and they are illusions. And we have to get to a point in our understanding that we recognize, first of all, this stuff is all made up. Look around us. When it's not nature, it's made up, and it's made up by man. So where did we get our value system from? And wherever we got our value system from is steering how we feel and how we're thinking and how we're acting, you know? And I think that we need to look at, you know, those things that we give value to, because the thing that we give value to, we hold on to. So you may have a situation where there's a neighbor next door. You might have five cars and the neighbor had five children. And in your value system, you know, these cars mean so much to you, you don't even recognize that in giving the neighbor a car, you know, how you would be supporting that neighbor and dealing with their particular issues. So I think the things that we give value determine where we get our strength from. And so if I love this material reality so much that's created by man, in addition to be created and being created by man, is also a part of a particular paradigm. And so if we embracing that so much, where we loving things more than we love one another, more than we love supporting one another and advancing the cause of humanity, then these breakdowns will continue. So until people stop and realize what we give value to, we gave value to. It doesn't mean that it has that value. It's only because we gave it that value. How did Picasso get a painting that can be sold for $15 million? Where do you find that at? In the garden somewhere, you pulled it off a tree, or it came from a cloud, or it was in some water? No, where did you find it at? No, man is here to do great things, to create things, and people created that. And because it's an agreement in humanity, then it becomes real. Well, so it is with everything else. Only do it have to be that way. When people are given a life in absence of their own understanding, and they believe that the life that's given to them is what it's supposed to be, you will always be stuck in these issues. When you recognize that it's all made up, You can step out of that. You can change your value system, and you can realize that it's not what I thought it was. And I give you an example. I had, you've been knowing me for a while. You know, you and I both share the idea of having beautiful cultural pieces that we would wear on our arms and stuff like that. I had an amber piece for my wrist. And I said to myself, I will give up everything I have. I won't give this up. And one day I was going to the doctors and I was doing some cleansing work. And the sister looked at that and she said, oh my God, this is beautiful. My spirit said, give it to her. My story said, keep it, right? And so I'm in this conversation with myself and I made myself listen to my spirit. I took it off and I gave it to her. Julius, seriously speaking, it took me about 3 months to resolve that issue within myself because I had such an attachment to that. But here's what came out of that. It had no real value whatsoever, other than the value that I gave it, and it freed me. It really freed me, you know. And then when I began to look at the things that I have, I began to see that who I was being was based on the things I gave value to. And I stopped giving value to all of this stuff other than loving myself, loving a higher power, loving people, seeing people as I see myself. And the work began to become impactful then because now I moved myself out of this world of form, out of this material reality. And when that happened, which I don't know whether a conversation brings a person to that point or it's the work and commitment that you do with yourself, and then you get a freedom that comes from a spiritual place. And then when you experience that, I don't know if there's any turning back, because for myself, I love love. I love how love makes me feel, and I love how it just makes me care about people. And I'm free, man, to just simply be. And I think that for me, that's the work that you have to do. And so I found that and giving away that piece, and it opened up volumes, man, of love inside of me that was dormant because I had attachments that was like locks on doors. And those locks came off those doors, man. And I'm doing what I do now. And it's inspiring to people. I believe that when you're inspired, then you're connected. When you're rationalizing, you might have a good story. It doesn't necessarily mean that you are connected and you're inspired. So I look for the inspiration. So I share with people information that takes them within themselves so they can recognize their own inspiration. And once you get that, the whole idea is to maintain it.
Mm-hmm. But tell us about Keep Love Present. What is that? Because you've developed the curriculum. You're working in the community. You're promoting those ideas, that culture, that philosophy, and is quite radical, but yet you're being embraced by elements of the community. So tell us what Keep Love Present is, and then tell us about the curriculum and the culture.
Okay. Keep Love Present origin came out of the work of Fathers Go Get Your Sons and Don't Forget Your Daughters. Over the years, the question became like, why? Why Fathers Go Get Your Sons, Don't Forget Your Daughters? To keep love present. That was the answer. What does that look like? What does that sound like? So all of these other questions begin to be generated in the conversation. Keep Love Present shows up as a way of healing, and that healing looked like a particular kind of lifestyle. And so Keep Love Present, it's a reminder. It's a reminder of a lifestyle, of living a healthy lifestyle, of living a good lifestyle. Now, I want to go back a little bit, though, and speak about when you look at the language, Keep Love Present, you will see that in the word love, you actually see dots. So you actually see it when it's written as keep L dot, O dot, V dot, E dot present. The reason for that is because my spirit, in speaking to me, said, we have a low vibration of the idea of love. Don't say the word love, because when you say the word love, it's going to speak into that vibration. And then talking with people through that, you're going to be in some serious conversations. You have to find a way to get them to listen and speak about love differently. And so that's when the dots came up. So those dots, dots, D-O-T-S, stand for details of the story. And what those dots represent is that when we say keep love present, we never really say L dot, O dot, V dot, E dot, because they represent the details about love that we've learned to overlook. And so what we say is that those details is the knowledge that we have to acquire. And we feel like knowledge is love in action. And so the more knowledge that you acquire, the more you will see that everything is whole and everything is complete. Everything is oneness. And so in our greatest definition of love, you will find oneness. So in the idea of keep love present, this particular lifestyle is a lifestyle of oneness. And within that lifestyle, you see how love looks and people caring and sharing and having fun and sharing new recipes and new ideas and calling on one another, you know, for the utilization of their gifts and their talents and all of these great things that sustains the individual, the family, and the community. You will know that it's an authentic love because it doesn't carry regret, hurt, pain, and anger, and frustration. It doesn't carry all of that. It can come out of that because it's a part of, those things can come out of that because it's a part of our growth and our development. The question, though, shows up over time. We hear conversations like, don't show love. Love will get you killed. Love stinks. I'll never love again. Love has been given a bad rap and made the reason for a problem. For me, those are the reasons why we need to pay attention to how come so much emphasis has put on love and the way where the outcome is those things. Yet, everything about our true nature teaches us that it's about love. And so to get people to capture their curiosity, those dots allows us to get people involved in talking about love in a different kind of way, talking about love through knowledge and not simply through the world of form or an emotional relationship with another human being. It is so much bigger than that. That is just an aspect of it. And so being able to have those conversations, knowledge begin to simply be rekindled in people, and they begin to become more enlightened about this whole idea of love and the fact that, wait a minute, when we say keep love present, and we say that it's a reminder, knowledge brings us to the point where we recognize that we do know what something like keep love present is. Because it's really interesting when you say to somebody, keep love present, they say, what's that? To me, that's a flag. That's a red flag. What's that? So when we have these conversations with people to bring them to a point where they really know what it is, and an example of how we do that is going back to that child, right? That love was present when that child was born. The child had the language. The child may say, well, where the love at? Because the child knows what it knows that love because it experienced that love, you know, when it exited the mother's womb, but somewhere along the lines, it got lost. And now we in these distant realities, these illusions, and live in this world of form. And so we have gotten lost in that. So when we recognize that love is our nature and that's the core of who we really are, then it just kind of like rekindles you, right? And again, it goes back to this, because I had this conversation all the time, Joyce, and I answer this question in this way, and where it may seem a little philosophical, I feel like don't leave that place, because when you start rationalizing this, then you miss the reality of how love works, because love don't show up on the paper. It doesn't show up in anywhere except for the heart first. The journey in the heart is a conversation that each individual had to take on for themselves. And the idea is to take on that journey. When you take on that journey, you discover things about yourself that you know and things about yourself that you haven't not yet got present to. But when you stay in that journey, you recognize it. And in recognizing it, then you rekindle your own self. You begin to self-correct, not correct, but you begin to self-correct with your own individual nature. And in doing that, it is where we learn to grow. This is where we learn to see the world differently. This is where we learn to see each other differently. The journey is to hold on, though, to hold on to you. We believe that when we use love as the catalyst to living our life, then it connects us to the reason why we are living our life. And it's not in these narratives, and it's not in these particular conversations. It's in your authentic reason for being. And once you realize your authentic reason for being, you become unstoppable because you got some gift that you attach to that you bring to the world. Keep love present. We share with people. Remember the song that we used to hear when we was growing up, brother, when we was younger? It said, "What the world needs now is love, sweet love." Remember that song? Excuse me. And at the time, that was the song to sing. And it seemed like it was the answer. For me, I like to share with the listening audience that I come to learn that that's not necessarily a true statement, a true song. Love has always been here. We have been distorted about the idea and disconnected from the idea of love. So in the formula of keep love present, we say that love is the most important feeling, but keep is the most important word. Because once we self-correct, once we are operating off of the proper knowledge, which is the knowledge of self and the knowledge that comes out of nature, now we know what it is that we need to do to maintain that keep. An example of that is simply food, okay? Learning to eat to live. Once we understand the body, then we understand what kind of food that we need to be putting in our body. And so this is the power of keep. And so in the idea of understanding ourselves holistically, once we recognize that, then keep becomes the practice of how we maintain the idea of love in our life. And so the idea of present, which is now, is also a gift, is also the way we present ourselves. So in the idea of present, the word present, we have three ideas. And so when we recognize that love is the gift and keep is the practice, and it shows up in the now, because now is all it is. Future is a now to come, and the past is a now that used to be. But the reality is that it can only be real in the now. And so in that now, then we are presenting ourselves in a particular kind of way because we're practicing how to maintain that thing that we now have reclaimed in loving ourselves in the way that how it started being brought to the world as a gift, because the birth of life is a gift. And then recognizing that and maintaining that, what shows up in every moment is the gift of love. And so we share with people, and I hope I was clear on in terms of how I say that, because I say it so much that it comes out differently a lot of different times when I say it. But the main idea is to recognize that we are love, to learn about that through the knowledge of self. And then once you recognize that, then employ practices that indicative to your particular reality, because everybody's keep love present and different. Only the goal is the same, and that is to be healthy and to practice those things that keep you healthy. So in the now, you present yourself in a beautiful way, you're present in the moment, and every interaction that a person have with you, you're giving them the gift of love. That culture looks like a safe environment, because in order practice keep love present, you got to stay focused on yourself. So I'm not looking at what Julius is doing. What I'm doing is, because I'm staying focused on myself, I'm granting you the right to your own beingness, you granted me the right to my own beingness. That means that anything that was in the environment that caused me to have fear of being self-expressed, or, you know, caused me to feel shame and embarrassed, that stuff disappears, because now I'm focusing in on me. The other individuals that's doing, working with Keep Love Present, they're focusing in on them. And what we're actually doing is sharing our gifts with one another.
Mm-hmm. Now, you work with several agencies, school boards, community groups. You do webinars, workshops. You're getting ready to do a podcast. So how can people contact you to get more information about what you're doing and even invite you to speak? Because now with technology, you can be anywhere in the world.
So they made it easy now, right? Well, first of all, I would like to invite people to, you know, look at our website, which is keeplovepresent.com. And much of what we talked about today, they can get more detail and even more clarity in terms of the work of Keep Love Present, you know, in this history of origin and what our goals and objectives are here in this present moment. They can also reach us at keeplovepresent4@gmail.com. They can do that. And I'm also willing to give out my number, which is 609-929-5648. When they go on the
give that URL, the phone number, and the email address again. Yes. And we'll let you give it before we close out, but a lot of times people don't have a pen and paper right at hand. So.
Yes, sir. So our website is keeplovepresent.com. Our email address is keeplovepresent4@gmail.com. And my phone number is 609-929-5648.
Okay. We're right now, because all we have is the present, but we also recognize that there is a reality of a present that is projecting itself forward. What are some of your goals in terms of the future, in terms of like short-term, intermediate, and then long-term goals for Keep Love Present?
That's a big one. we have some campaigns. I don't want to go into too much detail, but I will give you that we have some program initiatives that we're going to be starting. You also mentioned that we're going to start our podcast, which is Love Conversations Only. Within that podcast, you know, we'll be able to share a lot of information and activities that we are doing. One of the things we do presently, I have a host of young men that they are Keep Love Present ambassadors. Every Wednesday, I do a class with them and with the Keep Love Present curriculum. We go out, we go to the malls, and I'm unarmed, actually. And I need to straighten it out for 1 minute. So give me, I'll have to move. We have a Keep Love Present wristband. And on the Keep Love Present wristband, we keep these wristbands on. And so whenever those individuals who practice Keep Love Present doesn't have the wristband on, we say that you're unarmed. And you're unarmed of the reminder of your heart, right? And so when we greet each other, like this. You know, we rather than shaking hands, we greet each other by connecting with our wristbands. And, you know, we allow our fingers to, you know, extend, because we said that we're passing the torch. And so the hand like this is symbolic to the torch. So we're passing the torch, a reminder to people to keep love present. And so we go out in the community and we share information about Keep Love Present. We share that we have Facebook, we have Instagram, you know, so we're present on social media. And so we're growing in our understanding how to use them, you know. And so those particular kinds of things, you know, we're doing in the community to begin to stimulate more of the conversation, because the goal is to heighten the conversation. So we have some campaign strategies that are huge along the lines of billboards and banners and different things that we want to do in order to heighten the conversation of Keep Love Present, because we believe that the power is in the narrative. And so with all the narratives that we have going on, you know, we're looking for ways where we can maintain our consistency and to pull people in the conversation. Let me go back and share something real quick. The capsule. I went to a Stop the Violence forum years ago when I first started being inspired with the thought of sharing the language of Keep Love Present. And so in this particular forum, I had made a comment, we've been saying stop the violence for all of this time. So what does stop the violence look like, right? And so I made that comment, the word love showed up, and I said, well, let's stay right there. Let's keep love present. Let me tell you what happened. All of these people began to gather around me about the conversation of keep love present, right? And it shifted energy from stop the violence. And because it shifted energy, it created a little kind of little disturbance in that particular forum. So we was asked to go out in the hallway and talk about the conversation of keep love present because of how the impact that it had. But that showed us there that there are people who they're just waiting to hear the conversation because it's dormant in us, you know? And so the idea is just heighten the conversation. Whoever's supposed to hear it, they're going to hear it. And as we begin to practice Keep Love Present Strong, which is one of the concepts of one of the young men that I work with, he said, the more people practice Keep Love Present, the stronger it gets. And so as it gets stronger, more people will hear it because more people are talking about it. More people are practicing it. More people are wearing the braces and doing magnificent things. One thing, again, I want to share with people about what we're doing in the community. In Woodbury, New Jersey, the Woodbury School District, the superintendent, Mr. Joe Jones, who moved on, but he embraced the Keep Love Present model. And so Keep Love Present is in that school district. One particular school, the Walnut Street Elementary School, is our pilot Keep Love Present Elementary School model. People can visit that school whenever they want to, and they can reach out to me through the information that we gave them so I can connect them to the school, and you can actually see Keep Love Present in action. It is unbelievable, the creativity, the love, the passion, and the kind of activity that's going on in that school. So much so that when they did the evaluation of the schools in the district, we were at least 40 points above all the schools, maybe about 7 years. And all that was because we shifted the thought from stopping violence, and we answered it with Keep Love Present. And we're true to that in the community and in the families that support that school, and magnificent things happen. So if you really want to see Keep Love Present in action in that way, we can go to Woodbury School District and you will see it happen. The principal there is Dr. Jeffrey Adams. And, you know, he is an individual that him and I work together on Keep Love Present. He's a partner and ambassador in the work, and he's open to anyone who wants to come and visit the school to see Keep Love Present in action.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I just want to comment on one thing. You mentioned vibrations, energy, and that is the goal that has been the admonition for millennia. When you read in holy books, texts, lift up your heads, they're not talking about holding your head up. They're not talking about have erect posture. What they're really talking about is raise the consciousness. So before we sign off, tell us how important and how crucial raising the vibrations and the consciousness are, because you gave us an example of it where you had one section of a mentality, just the blinders focusing on violence, but then you had another conversation focusing on love, and it made a difference that people could feel it right there in that time and space.
I believe, and what has worked for me and the individuals that have embraced the conversation to keep love present, that once you become conscious, you start seeing from a different place. You start seeing what others are not seeing. You know, you start recognizing that this reality that we live in, right, that this reality, as I shared before, is made up. And because it is made up, then it no longer has power over you as it did when we were unconscious. Consciousness allows us to see, you know, the possibility of things. And in seeing the possibility of things, you also become unstoppable. As I begin to do the work myself, and this is a truth, right? When I move out in the community, I see buildings, yet I don't see them. In other words, I recognize that they are there, only that they don't impair my own possibility. And that possibility comes from the fact that once you raise your frequency and your consciousness, you know, and you recognize that everything is energy, and people have taken this energy and they have shaped and fashioned it into what you and I see. So what about you and I? Once you free yourself and you recognize that level of consciousness when you're within yourself, then you recognize that you can contribute to the world as well. And all that you see is not the reality, it's just a reality. And that reality constantly changed in the speaking of people and the creativity of people and the kind of things that human beings would like to share in the world, you know? And so you will not see that until you raise your consciousness and recognize that everything that you and I see is energy. And you don't necessarily have to hate on it. You don't have to disrespect it. You don't have to go against it. No, embrace that other people are just doing great things. And if something is working against you, it is because you haven't raised your consciousness to a level where you recognize that you have the freedom to your own self-expression. And when you do that, then those things that you felt like had power over you no longer does. And that's very important, though, because, you know, I remember years ago, a gentleman told me, when I was kind of like involved in the politics a little bit, he said to me, you know what, one of the problems with people of color specifically is in those circles. And I said, what's that? And he said, they're asking power. He said, our vibration, our frequency is so low. People are doing great things in the world, and they don't want us at the table, because when we come to the table, we come with such a low vibration and low frequency. You know, and that stayed with me, it resonated with me, and I never really understood it. I rationalized it, but I didn't understand it in my spirit until I was able to become conscious. Consciousness came to me when I began to detach myself from the world of form, detach myself from things that I thought was the reality, and recognizing that they're just something that another human being created. And it reminded me of how awesome it means to be a human being, you know. So I can be in that conversation. What people's intentions are different. You know, some people got good intentions, some people got bad intentions, but the truth is the only thing that you and I can do is create, you know, and depending on the level of our frequency, of our vibration, will determine what we create, you know. And so being conscious allowed you to see reality for what reality is. That statement that I just made will not be understood because you can rationalize it. It's going to be understood by taking on the work of becoming healthy and holistic and recognizing through the knowledge of self what's real. And then as you begin to recognize what's real and you start raising your consciousness, then you'll begin to see what's actually being said and what's been said as you've been sharing through this conversation over the ages.
Give us your URL, your email, and your phone number, and we'll let you go with our gratitude.
Thank you, brother. And I'm going to leave with a gratitude and appreciation. Again, our webpage is keeplovepresent.com. Our email address is keeplovepresent4@gmail.com. Our phone number is 609-929-5648. And I am Naeem Muslim.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. Appreciate you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you.
All right. All right.